In today's episode of Bar Rescue, John Taffer insists that a boyfriend and girlfriend cannot work in the same bar because of potential stealing issues. It's a hot take, and we'll let you know whether or not we agree here on the Bar Rescue After Show.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Yeah.
Wait for it.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
The worst Lil Jon impression in history. Guys, we're playing Lil Jon because, of course, the man himself was featured in today's episode of Bar Rescue. To me, it might have been one of the highlights of the episode,
yeah.
But we have plenty of thoughts on that. Before we get into it, guys, my name's Jeff. Of course, I'm not Captain Kevin Undergaro. I feel like I must apologize on his behalf because we all know he is the true Bar Rescue aficionado. But the good news is we have some amazing fill-ins, including myself. Again, my name is Jeff. I'm not alone. Phil Svitek is here.
That's right. It's like Batman and Robin.
Batman and Robin, baby. Phil and I both work for Kevin here at the network, so we're pretty in tune with his line of thinking. And you guys know I've been here before, as has Phil. Phil, you're kind of an OG with Bar Rescue.
A little bit. Good to be back in the fold.
Well, guys, today we covered Season 6, Episode 18, and the episode was covering the Blue Water Daiquiri and Oyster Bar in Jacksonville, Florida, which is now called Sydney, an Australian beach club. Name change. Which is interesting because I feel like as of late, John Taffer's been less keen on the name changes. I also, guys, I have to shout out producer Juliet because she's here as well. She watched the episode. Jules, say hi to the fans.
Hey, Jeff. Hi, fans. Thanks for tuning in.
We're not only talking about the episode today, guys. We also have some Bar Rescue updates, which I feel like with a bar like this is especially interesting because I do feel like it was a pretty heated episode. But before we get into our coverage, I want to go over overall thoughts. Jules, because you are our lady on the panel, I'd love to hear what you thought of the episode overall.
I really enjoyed this episode. It was really strong. It's very entertaining. And I can't wait till we discuss a little bit more in depth about this whole situation of working romantic relationships. Are they a good idea? Are they a bad idea? I'm wondering what you guys think.
Cool. Phil, what did you think of this episode?
It's good to be back here talking about it. I mean, I think a lot happened. For me, an hour almost seemed too quick. There was so much to explore. I know Chung was kind of outside of the business, but the fact that he ran a couple of successful businesses then managed to buy this one, I think there's a history that could have been explored. And you know, it's not John's fault by any means, just the show was limited to the time slot that it's limited to.
I agree, but I will say I do feel like sometimes the show, despite that hurdle, does manage to dig in a little more. It might have been that these bartenders and managers were just sort of unwilling to open up like other managers and bartenders have been in the past. But I will say, I'm glad you guys really liked the episode. For me, it wasn't my favorite episode of Bar Rescue. I do feel like there was an untapped potential. And of course, screaming angry John Taffer is an essential part of this show. But something about the way it I always feel like John knows what he's doing in terms of really getting change and dynamic development out of these managers and bartenders. But this is the first time I feel like his approach didn't necessarily benefit those he was trying to motivate, to the point where we almost lost the manager of the bar. But we can get into whether or not John was handling all of his staff as well as he usually does in the episode. Let's talk about the episode, though, guys. We are covering the Blue Water Daiquiri and Oyster Bar in Jacksonville, Florida. We've been in Florida a lot.
No blue daiquiris tonight.
No blue daiquiris tonight, man. Those daiquiri machines were having a lot of issues. This is in Jacksonville, Florida. Great real estate.
Yes, indeed.
Surprising that the bar wasn't doing better, but once we meet the geniuses behind the bar, I think we're not shocked that the bar isn't doing better. Of course, Chung owns the bar. He's a Chinese immigrant who, as the episode mentioned, has owned multiple businesses. His second-in-command, Charles, manages the bar initially with Bridget, his girlfriend, who was a bartender there, but RIP, we lost her early in the episode. And the other main kind of character we met was Chris, who was another bartender who I feel looks a lot like Chris Lilly's character, Jonah, if any of you guys are Chris Lilly fans.
Speaking of Australia,
exactly.
Nice tie in there.
But the bar is currently $30,000 or $300,000 in debt. The show sort of suggested that a lot of that owed to the fact that Chung left for 5 to 6 weeks to go to New York. And in that time, Charles kind of tanked the bar. Jules, how do you feel about this team? We have Chung, Charles, for a little bit, Bridget, and Chris.
I think there was a lot of potential there. I was very conflicted throughout the episode of how I felt about the manager. At times when he was crying, I felt bad for him. And then at other times, I was like, you know what? You need to take ownership. And he was kind of placing blame on a lot of things and playing victim. And I never enjoy when someone does that.
Yeah. What do you think, Phil?
You know what? It's a misfit of characters that come together to run this bar, which ironically is not much unlike AfterBuzz in a strange sense. And the big issue is that none of them were pulling in the same direction,
right.
Nor did it seem like they cared to put in that effort for whatever reason. And so it just took a catalyst like John to come in and make them work together. The interesting part, as far as the girlfriend, I know this is a little bit ahead, but I'd be curious to know what kind of happened with Charlie in that relationship.
I know. Maybe we just talk about that now, because that does feel like the elephant in the room, and then after that we can get into recon. But John makes a very, I wouldn't say unprecedented, but I thought surprising decision to can Bridget right off the top. And what I gathered from the show was his logic was, I don't necessarily know that something shady is going on, but when you work with a significant other, something shady could be going on, so you have to nip it in the bud? Is that what you guys gathered?
Yeah, essentially. I mean, part of, certainly one of the things that John talks about is that the systems need to be put in place. And right now, they have no systems.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, when there's not a system, things can be taken advantage of. And, you know, one way or the other, as the bartender test looked at it, that he was losing $3,000 due to overpour stealing or whatever.
Right. What did you think of this decision, Jules?
The decision to fire the girlfriend, I was kind of conflicted about, mainly because at the end of the day, people are going to, you know, it's not the best situation, but when you're at work, that's how you meet people and that's how people make relationships, and it is what it is. And I felt it was a little bit unfair to assume that she was stealing because she was dating her manager. And I feel that because that's your boss and you're coming home to him, you actually want to do even a better job because you don't want that, you are so tied into your boss that you want to impress them because you don't want to deal that any kind of negativity in your relationship, whether it be at work or romantically, if that makes sense.
You're of a higher mind there, Juliet. Most people
aren't.
Lower their standards.
Why is that, do you think?
Because it's complacency at its finest.
Yeah, because they can, I guess. The thing I didn't love here, though, to be honest, was I feel like a lot of times this show will say, if we can't do this, you're fired, or you need to prove that you can do this or you're fired. I feel like the show rarely says this could be the case, so she's gone. And I just feel like I'm used to John very tangibly justifying his managerial decisions. And I never really feel like I got a great answer from him as to why Bridget had to be fired besides, well, what if she's stealing? Which, I don't know, it just didn't feel like the most justified decision I've ever seen made on this show.
I kind of agree, especially in the sense where she had no chance to repent.
Yeah.
She had no chance to just make this wrong or right. It was just, no, straight out the bat, you gotta go.
Yeah.
Well, you kind of have to eliminate certain factors, right? And when it comes to Charlie, you know, John can't necessarily predict everything, but I think he's intuitive enough to know that Charlie's going to have excuses, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to backtalk. And lo and behold, that's what he does. And so if you add back in Bridget and that element, he's only going to strengthen his resolve on those excuses.
Yeah.
And so you have to kind of essentially eliminate that temptation, I feel like. What do they call it? It's just like par for the course. The ends justify the means. And,
right.
You know, as far as her, like, listen, I mean, at the end of the day, if he starts doing well, and she really is that good of a bartender, I think she can use this as motivation, too.
Right.
We just obviously didn't necessarily see that side of that. And again, that might be just more wishful thinking on my part, but...
Well, you never know. I mean, we only get to see the episode as is, and we do have some Bar Rescue updates later in the show. But I guess just for me, I'm used to really tracking with John's logic for his business decisions. And this was the first time I didn't necessarily feel like personally I got a great reason for that decision besides speculative. But at the same time, John is the genius behind all this, so we have to trust his instincts. Let's talk about recon. Little John showed up.
Little John.
I will say, I love seeing Lil Jon. I'm surprised the episode didn't use him more. Jules, you're a super...
Yeah!
There it is. Our producer is on it. I mean, Lil Jon's a huge deal. He's one of the biggest party DJs, especially of the 2000s. It's a huge get for the show. Jules, you're a super fan. Did you feel like they used Lil Jon as well as they could have?
No, if you're able to book Lil Jon, use him in every single scene. Have him interact with everybody and make it, you know, just grab it all, do it all. I understand that maybe he can't be there for the whole episode because they're filming throughout several days. However, he was there in the car with Jon, and Jon got up and he said, I'm going to go confront them. Why don't you bring Lil Jon with you? That's impressive to a crew. And he's there. Utilize him. Yeah.
I so agree. Phil, do you track with Jules there?
Yeah, I do. And now, granted, I think at this point, based on the way they highlighted the relationship, Lil Jon knows that Taffer's gonna do what he does, and right. I don't know, maybe there's a side because he is a party guy, like for Lil Jon to give out notes, that's not necessarily him,
yeah,
you know. And so I don't know, maybe he's just protecting his image a little bit.
Could be. I could just have seen Jon being like, guys, this is the biggest party DJ, he built this empire, highest selling platinum records, here's what he has to say. I don't know, I feel like Jon Taffer's so good at ascribing clout to those he brings along with him, and I feel like there's a way in which he could have used Lil Jon here to influence and motivate, but
I agree. I would have wanted to hear Jon give critiques and then just have Lil Jon in the back being like, yeah.
Story of two Johns.
The story of two Johns, I know. But that's okay. Let's talk about some of these issues at Recon. They're a daiquiri bar, and half of their daiquiri machines don't work. That's a problem. One of their drinks was called the Mother Effer, which, whatever, that's fine.
100%. I mean, we've dealt with that on the show. And
right.
Granted, a bar is not necessarily a family place, but unless you're like a strip club, you try to just name it what it is.
Right.
You don't need to put an expletive there.
I agree. The good news is they know how to shuck an oyster, so that was the one good thing we saw during this recon.
We didn't fully highlight that, though, like as far as the cook, you know?
Right.
And what she was capable of.
We hardly met this staff. That's the other thing, too, is this was really just the Chung and Charles show, because Bridget was fired right off the top, and I feel like Chris was just making side comments all episode. He's kind of our comic relief, but this was the huge red flag to me. They're a seafood bar, and they don't have crab leg crackers. And I don't know about you, I love crab legs, but if you don't have crackers, totally just ruins the whole experience. So this was a
bummer. You could take them home, maybe.
Maybe you could take them home, but seafood doesn't keep, so you need
better
to have
run
those.
Home.
Yeah, you need to have these ready. Any other recon reactions that you guys had?
I mean, usually we highlight how dirty a place is. It seemed like initially in a lot of the walkthrough moments that we got that things were sort of in decay, and we didn't highlight that as much. Again, I think there was just so much the episode that got left on the cutting room floor.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, because of Chung and Charlie, and, granted, through the renovation, obviously all that got fixed, but it did seem like the bar had general problems as far as the kitchen and everywhere else.
Right. It is. We usually do have that, though, so it felt a little weird to have that missing. Okay, let me look. So let's talk about their initial... John's initial entrance. I do feel like we got a very angry John this episode. Did you guys feel like he seemed typical John or even ragier John?
Yeah, he definitely was very upset with this whole crew. And I think it's part of the show. Listen, people do tune in to hear this man yell at other people. There's something cathartic about it. That is why we tune in. And yeah, I'm not ashamed to say I kind of enjoy it. It's why I'm here for it.
Right, for sure. Did you feel like this seemed like an exceptionally angry John or the John we know and love?
I think par for the course angry John. I don't think higher or lower than any other episode.
Fair enough. Well, let's talk about who John brings in for this episode. We get Charity Johnston, very exciting to have her. John reminds us that she offers classic cocktails with a modern twist. And Mike Ferraro, who's good at gourmet comfort food. Personally, gourmet comfort food, I feel like, is my exact lane of food that I love.
You'll have to go to his restaurant in New York.
Maybe, John, I know you listen to the podcast. Can you get the AfterBuzz crew maybe some tickets to go to Mike Ferraro's restaurant in New York? We would do it.
Jeff's wedding is coming up.
My wedding is coming up, so if you want to get me a gift, I would love to go visit Mike Ferraro in New York. We're based in LA, just so y'all know.
I do have to say, I was a little surprised, though. He is a very well-known chef and has a lot of skills. However, this is a seafood bar, and they didn't really highlight a chef who was just really entwined with seafood, I feel like. Or at least that wasn't explained enough for me.
Fair enough. You could have seen more. And he's not only is it comfort food, but here are some of the seafood dishes he's revolutionized, that
exactly,
kind of thing.
Exactly. That are specific to seafood.
I get that. Well, let's talk about their first instruction. So Charity teaches them how to make a daiquiri. Unfortunately, none of them knew the ingredients of a daiquiri. And unfortunately,
isn't it just daiquiri?
it's just mix and ice and hopefully a machine that works. This blue oyster daiquiri bar, they did not even know it was in a daiquiri.
No, not whatsoever.
Too bad. You know what, though? They tried. They did their best.
I think it was a very smart play to have Chung really sort of learn the business.
Yes.
And like an owner, take the literal ownership from the business. And if they see him doing it, then everyone else feels motivated to kind of do that. I mean, that, you know, granted, they're not the brightest. They're not the sharpest tools in the shed,
right?
Either, but seeing Chris have Chung do this, and regardless, like it didn't matter if he was good or bad. It's just he put an effort and he was willing to learn,
right?
I think that really did ignite the passion of everybody else. Now Charlie, to an extent, but certainly the other staff.
So yeah, I agree that Chung seemed willing to learn, but I felt like compared to how John treated Charlie, he was pretty easy on Chung. Do you agree with me, or do you feel like he was proportionally angry at Chung as he should have been to Charlie?
Yeah, there was at least what we saw was disproportionate.
Yeah. Do you think so, Jules?
I agree, because it's true that we needed Charlie to take ownership of all his mistakes. But on the flip side, even though you're the owner and not the manager, you are the owner.
Yeah.
So everything falls on you, and it's your job to make sure that you have a manager that's taking care of everything. And they even talked about it in the top of the episode that he handed him this position of manager, and then he left to go to New York for 8 months.
Right.
So he clearly didn't, you know, make sure that his stuff was prepared and set for success. So I feel that we should have been a little bit harsher towards him.
Yeah, I mean, the fact of it being he's had this bar for 4 years, and he mentions that he's gone through six managers. So mm-hmm. This, in essence, is the last manager of those six. So the system is not in place for him to be able to leave.
Right. Well, and I do think, like, if you're an owner and you've gone through six managers, where's the problem? Who's the problem? Is it the six managers that you fired in 4 years? To me, the problem is pretty identifiably Chung here. And I just never feel, John really lit that fire under Chung, but I don't know. I mean, like, I will say numerous times throughout this episode, I was cringing a little bit watching Chung try to engage with the people component of ownership, and I feel like he never quite got there. He didn't even know how to make a drink.
Not everyone's as charismatic as you, but it wasn't about that. It was about him really getting out of his comfort zone.
Yeah.
And doing what he's, quite honestly, never done in his life.
Right. That's
true. As you said, like, has he ever talked to people?
Right.
You know, it probably hasn't.
Yeah, and maybe the owner of a bar doesn't need that as a prerequisite for success, but I just never feel like John even challenged him to engage with the people component of the business as much as I would have expected.
Well, I think, again, this is just speculation, but the fact that he just seemed a lot more willing to do these things.
You're right.
And the fact that he did have a smile on his face. So, like, okay, regardless of whether or not he was that successful at it, he was really being pushed out of his comfort zone and
right.
doing what was asked of him to the best that he could.
He was open.
Yeah.
That's true. Well, let's talk about the stress test. So it's funny, with some stress tests, there's very identifiable pieces that are really making the stress test fail. I felt like here...
Oranges.
The oranges, I guess. Just no way. I mean, Chung tried to help with the food, but he put all the food on one single ticket. I just felt like everyone was just falling short. That, you know, it was just like this really was a ragtag team that did not know how to run a bar.
No, I mean, I wonder how many drinks they actually did get out.
I don't know. But Chris was like, I've never seen receipts before. How do I make these drinks? And it's like, buddy, you've worked at a bar for the last couple of years. Like,
yeah, but that just goes to show how inoperable the business has been.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Well, this, I don't know if you guys have anything else with the stress test. I feel like rather than one identifiable problem, it was just the whole team was a mess.
Well, think about it this way. You know, it's very comedic that Charlie does say, like, you know, we just got slammed. And it's like, well, yeah, by your definition, you used to have like five people here. And therefore, Chris didn't need receipts because.
Right. It's like, this is what you want. As a business, you want to get slammed with customers. This is the goal. So you've got to embrace it. Jules, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, completely agree, Jeff, is that that's what you strive for, is to be overwhelmed, is to be making a drink after another, having so many clients that your bar is super succeeding. And he, again, Charlie was not taking that ownership of a manager. He was on the side making drinks. And
yeah.
John Taffer even said it himself. He did an okay job as being a bar back
right.
when his job is management.
It's a good point. Well, of course, we want to... John always sits down and has one-on-ones with the owners and managers after the stress test. And John and Chung have a great one-on-one. And John challenges Chung to be empowered to really work with his staff. So he says, all right, Chung, I want you to get Charlie. Bring him out here so we can all do a sit-down. And Charlie refuses. Did you guys see this coming?
No, this was very interesting and somewhat ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, at that point... Because at that point, Charlie, like, why are you in the car?
Right.
How did you come to be there? Like, what did you think was going to happen?
It's a great point. I didn't even think about it that way. But it's like, if production is taking you to the location, you can at least expect that you're going to have to interact with John Taffer.
Or just, if you're going to continue on the show, what do you think is happening?
Right.
That was my whole thing. Is like, have you never seen an episode? You know cameras are coming.
Right.
And you don't know how the show works.
Well, eventually, so Chung tries to coax Charlie into the bar. Charlie refuses. Eventually, Taffer himself comes out and does convince Charlie to come into the bar. Honestly, I think we did get a quasi-apology from Taffer. Maybe I was a little hard on you. This is an example of the Taffer who's a great, great manager because he knew how to get inside Charlie and really motivate him, which he did here.
What was interesting between Chung and Charlie, it was kind of like a Mexican standoff and no one was... willing to pull the trigger because
right.
it was like, okay, so you know what has to be done. And it's like, great, fire me.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, they were both waiting for someone to make that move and no one did. And luckily, yeah, as you said, Taffer knew how to really deal with the situation.
Right.
And, yeah. And then I think part of when you sort of view it from that lens, Chung knew that there was a quality to Charlie. And that's why he was unwilling to pull that trigger no matter how much Charlie pushed.
Right. I actually think Chung handled this as well as he could have, as well as he knew how to do.
Yeah, he was as direct as he could be.
Right.
And I think he showed empathy, you know, and said, like, hey, we need to change and I want to change. And I want you to be part of that change, essentially.
Right. Well, these last 10 minutes were all about the new drinks, the new food, and the new bar. I thought this... we'll start with the food because I thought it looked really good. This mahi-mahi fish taco with mango slaw, definitely up my alley. What did you guys think?
I thought, yeah, they had the burger aspect of it too. They highlighted the oysters a little bit earlier mm-hmm. as far as how to make them. So there's a lot that could be done here.
Definitely. The shark attack, probably not a Jeff drink. I don't always love candy with my cocktails, but it was unique. How did you guys feel about the shark attack?
I think it's fun. I, you know, especially you got to think, right? One of the things that they highlighted was the summer tourism.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you're going to get slammed if you're going to get slammed the most. And so I don't know, people like weird gimmicks like that,
right.
especially during the summertime.
Like, in a touristy town, too.
Like, you know, look at it this way. We're not that far from Universal Studios, mm-hmm. and so when you go into, you know, that theme park, you get the gimmickiest things ever.
Right.
You know, and you just it's just fun. Speaking of fun, AfterBuzz fans, I want to let you know about our network. You guys know at this point that we do a lot of after shows. We cover nearly every single TV show here at the network. We certainly try, unlike most networks. And whether it's dramas, reality TV, sci-fi, and more, there's no network that works harder to serve you as a television fan. But we need your help. We're asking you to please subscribe to one or more of our YouTube channels. You can do so by subscribing to this channel. One of the benefits for you guys is that by subscribing, it will suggest content to you that is tailor-made for your appetite. And, of course, in return, AfterBuzz will continue to grow. Now, I know what you're thinking. Those pesky notifications. Hey, hey, hey.
I can't.
Jeff can't.
I can't.
Sometimes you
can
and sometimes you can't. Jeff can't.
I can't.
Well, they're optional.
That's good.
So, well, because you can with the notifications, they can be optional.
I love it. I love it.
So all you have to do is hit that subscribe button for this channel and check out other channels on our YouTube as well. And in the comments section, just let us know that you did. We'll thank you on air. And thank you for really being the best amazing fans and helping us make AfterBuzz the ESPN of TV talk.
I very well said, Phil. I will say, guys, I wanted to practice what I preach. So I decided to subscribe to some of our AfterBuzz YouTube channels. And it's been amazing. Again, I turned off the notifications. But when I get on YouTube, I feel like it's a Netflix queue. And I have all these videos recommended that are so perfect for me. That we're not just saying this, guys. It really will help you to subscribe to our network. So we would empower you to hit that subscribe button right now. We'll even wait for you to do it. Great. I think four of you just did it now, which is awesome. And for those listening on iTunes, I'd recommend hop on YouTube and try the visual AfterBuzz experience. It's pretty wonderful. All right. Let's talk about this renovation. I feel like this renovation was good. I will say one of my favorite things about renovations is the lighting. I feel like John Taffer is such a lighting genius. And I wasn't blown away by the way the bar was lit the second time around, but I don't know how you guys felt.
It's tough because it's, as they said, it's a party themed, you know, for the show, they always need a lot of light to be able to actually shoot. And I think it benefits from being darker.
Right.
And we don't get to see that as much.
Fair enough. Any thoughts on the renovation, Jules?
That's actually a great point, Phil. So you're saying that because of production being there, we're seeing it super lit. But if we were to go there, for instance, tomorrow night, it'd be a lot darker.
Yeah, 100%. And having been to an actual bar that was renovated, I mean, it's one of those things like they did a lot of touch-ups and they upgraded a lot of stuff. And, you know, I don't mean to diminish what they did, but it's more of an upgrade more than a rehaul. And I think you got to, for me, and this is just me, right? Whenever you have kind of a before and after, even like home renovation shows, unless the difference is like from the most, a house that's falling apart right. And is hoarding like tons and tons of magazines everywhere to being sparkly clean. The difference is very minuscule to me in that way through the television medium. I have to see it in for person. Myself.
Do you think this was because there's just so much to deal with in terms of management that they didn't really have time to really focus on the actual renovation?
Probably.
That's part of it. I will say, though, I do feel like there are episodes where you have a surly crew and the renovation is completely revolutionary. One thing I did like a lot was the decision to have that postcard social media wall. I think for a tourist bar in a tourist town, anything social media is really, really smart. Interestingly, they did change the name from Blue Water Daiquiri and Oyster Bar to Sydney, an Australian beach club.
And they Jackson,
yeah,
Florida.
In
I think that should have been part of the title.
In Jacksonville, Florida. On the water, here it is. That's what they should have called it. But I can see the appeal of an Australian-themed bar, but I will say I think there's something smart about having oysters in your bar name because anyone who likes oysters, I would guess that there's a lot more people who would be excited about the opportunity of oysters than Australia if they're looking for bars to go to. But I also trust John. I don't know. What do you guys think? Good name change?
It's tough for me to say. I mean, I think John's very smart. Knowing how to rebrand businesses.
Right.
And this bar has been around for 4 years. I think as a general rule, John's always said 3 years, you kind of got to do an upgrade or a rebrand type
yes.
of thing.
Yeah.
And certainly if a bar is just not working, you rebrand it. So I think this is a situation with like that. Sydney, I don't know, makes me think of shrimp.
That's
so
true.
They better have some good shrimp.
On the Bobby. Well, guys, we got to get out of here. But before we do, I would love to talk about some bar rescue updates.
AfterBuzz TV News.
Okay, so we're talking about Sydney, an Australian beach club in Jacksonville, Florida, with John Taffer and his crew renovated in January. So it's been about 6 months since the renovation. I will say we have some positive reviews since the renovation, but many more negative reviews. So here we go. I was surprised by the score when I looked this up on Yelp. We came here only because it was Monday and everything else was closed and the food was amazing. There's a positive review. We tried the signature cocktail called Shark Attack and it was really refreshing and tasty. Service was great and attentive. The ambience was great. Took a picture with the shark photo booth. Awesome. We will definitely be back and bring more friends. In terms of negative reviews since the renovation, the staff were friendly and customized my quesadilla to be vegetarian friendly. Taffer & Co. did not think to add anything vegetarian. I got super buzzed for my daiquiri, but the upstairs was closed and I didn't get a good look. This place seemed touristy and it wasn't great for a regular hangout. that's like a neutral review.
I didn't realize there was an upstairs.
I didn't either. The show didn't talk about it at all. No, 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 on so many levels, no. The food was fair, and that's being generous. We had the shrimp basket, and it was mediocre. The frozen shrimp was poorly battered and fried, and they could have used more minutes in the fryer. We politely sent the cold fries back, and we suffered through lunch to only be greeted by a huge freaking roach in the bathroom. We'll not be back ever. We came in a few weeks after Bar Rescue was there. There doesn't appear to be much done besides some paint. The specialty drinks they had were only downstairs, and the upstairs did not look like it had any work done. There was a full bar. We had the kiwi drink and the shark attack. The kiwi one was nice, but the shark attack was so sweet it didn't taste like it had any alcohol in it. Interestingly, the bar is currently looking to hire, so maybe with some new staff members they can turn it around.
Yeah, I'm more shocked by the upstairs.
I know. I'm interested that that wasn't even addressed in the episode, but again,
usually they lay out the bar.
Yeah, they
do. The kitchen, the I love when they go to the diagrams.
Yeah, even looking at the photos, I can't picture a staircase anywhere. But they're only there for 4 days, and there's only so much that Bar Rescue can do. So, anything else on the episode, Phil, before we make our way out?
No, that's it. Pirates.
Pirates.
Isn't that like a theme of the show still?
There's been some infamous pirate moments, but not in this episode, alas. But, of course, there will always be more rescue, more Bar Rescue, and we will always be here to cover it. Hopefully we have some pirate moments coming up in the future.
Well, Australia's known for their pirates, right?
Australia!
Just kidding, I don't know.
Who knows? But guys, this has been the Bar Rescue After Show here on AfterBuzz TV. Today we covered Season 6, Episode 18, talking all about the once Blue Oyster Bar, now reconverted to Sydney. We would love to hear your thoughts on this episode, guys. Of course, you can comment down below in the comments, or if you'd like, you can tweet at us. If you want to reach me, you can do that on Twitter, at Jeffrey C. Graham. Phil, how about you?
At Phil Svitek.
And Jules, how about you?
You can follow me at Bonjour Juliet on Instagram.
Perfect. Guys, we thank you so much for tuning in. Again, we're here every Monday at 2 p.m. talking about Bar Rescue, and we will see you next week, hopefully with Captain Kev, here on AfterBuzz TV.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.